Ladies and gentlemen, I have been asked by our chairman to talk about the topic of evidence-based policies and the World Academies, and not about infectious diseases, as it is documented in this nice booklet. Now, the topic, of course, is of interest, as we have heard already this morning and yesterday. How does it function? Can I get this forward? Oh, this one, okay. And we had already a very nice introduction about the function of national academies by Ruth Arnon. And we have heard from her that they have to function as being a learned society, and also that they have the function to give advice to policymakers. Now, obviously, this is important for the nation which has an academy. But internationally, of course, these academies are also getting more and more closer together because, as we know, in a globalized world, policymakers are making decisions which affect national governments as well. And to give an example, if you look into the EU, the European Union, 70 to 80% of all decisions made in the EU Parliament, EU Commission, has an impact on national governments. So it is important that not only national governments are advised through the national academies, but also that, for example, in Europe or in other parts of the world where we have international governments, that these academies come together and give advice, besides, of course, that they have a good international relationship if it comes to learned societies by supporting the interdisciplinary or transdisciplinary discussions. Okay, as a result of this getting closer together, we have so-called networks of world academies. And as you see on the top, there we have IAP, and IAP is a global network of science academies. This was founded in the 90s and consists of about 104 academies. And if you want to describe it, it is more than an umbrella of activities which actually is bringing everybody together to find programs which are worthwhile to pursue. Out of IAP comes Inter-Academy Council, IAC, and this consists of 15 members. These member academies are elected by IAP members. So they are a branch, actually, of IAP, and IAC has a function to deal with global problems. And I give an example. They have made a study on energy and climate, and recently they have been asked by the United Nations to analyze the IPCC report, in particular to look at the structure and procedures and the governance of this body. And they have made, I think, good suggestions how to improve the effectiveness of IPCC. And then you see IAMP, which is consisting of 69 academies. This is the Inter-Academy Medical Panel. These are academies which are really working in the area of health, and so they have a very strong arm of medicine, or they are entirely academies of medicine. And they deal with problems, let's say, climate change and health problem, infectious diseases, and so forth. And then we have four networks. And these networks are affiliated with IAP. And you have INES. This is the Inter-American Network of Academies of Sciences, consists of 18 academies. This is North America, South America. Then we have the Asian Academy of Sciences. There are 26. We have the Network of African Science Academies. There are 17. And then we have the European Academy Science Advisory Council, 27. And how these networks work, I would like to describe to you using the European Academy Science Advisory Council. This council was actually founded 10 years ago, and the idea was to provide a means for the collective voice of European science. Why is this so important? I mentioned that in the EU Commission and in the EU Parliament, decisions are made which affect every EU member, and I'm sure that Dr. Butcher, you would probably appreciate very much if his academy in Austria would give advice as a single academy, but whether all the other EU members would appreciate it, I don't know. So probably it's much better to have statements which are signed by all EU national academies, and this has quite an impact. We have a structure that we have a president, at the present time Sir Brian Heap. We have three vice presidents, one from the Royal Swedish Academy, one from the Royal Netherlands Academy, and our president here at the Hungarian Academy, Josef Palinkas, is also vice president of ESAC. So we try to pick up topics which are of importance to the policymakers in the EU. These topics are picked by the Council, by the individual academies. They bring it to the Council, we discuss there. The Council are putting up working groups, and these working groups are then present statements and recommendations to the Council, and then it gets endorsed by the Council. We also have so-called steering committees in the area we are working right now, and these areas are energy and climate. This is the bioscience area and also the environmental area. So there are three big topics where we are right now at the present time are active. We have secretariats. The main secretariat is at the Leopoldina May Academy in Halle, and we have in Brussels an office which is quite nice at the Flemish-speaking academy, so that we have connection from our office in Brussels to the different activities there in Brussels. Okay, what are the outputs? What did we produce? About 1.5 weeks ago, we presented to the EU Commission a statement on concentrated solar power. This was at the present time where we also had our birthday party, 10 years of existence, and it was quite a nice assembly of colleagues from the scientific area, but also from the Commission and from the Member of Parliament. And in this document, we have analyzed the effectiveness of Desertec in sub-Saharan Africa to see to what extent can actually Europe get energy from sub-Saharan Africa to concentrate in solar power. Impact of engineered nanomaterials of health is an example where we collaborate with the Joint Research Council, because in certain areas we are asked to collaborate with a partner when this partner doesn't have the expertise which I actually would like to get from other organizations. And here in this nanomaterial on health report, we have analyzed to what extent nanomaterial used in industry could have an effect on health. We have presented an infectious disease synthesis report, which is a summary of an activity of ESAC over the last 5 years. Over the last 5 years, we have almost every half a year presented a statement on infectious diseases. Since infectious diseases do not respect borders, we have to have, you know, and an analysis of these problems, which is quite big, definitely worldwide if it comes to infectious diseases. And due to the fact that we have published every half year statement, we are considered one of the leading organizations giving advice in the area of infectious diseases. And what we also have started is a lay summary. We have realized that when our publications are presented, they are good from a scientific point of view, and they are written in a way that actually someone with knowledge will understand it. But if we make a lay summary, it has a much wider and better impact. And we asked a science journalist to do so, and not a scientist, because scientists cannot write in a way that society will understand it. So this was quite effective. And this we have also done for synthetic biology, where we have picked up a topic which is of concern to certain societies in Europe, where they're afraid that synthetic biology would have a negative effect on life. So we picked up the topic, we presented synthetic biology, we also produced a lay summary which was quite successful and which helps to make it understandable to society and also to politicians. We also have picked topics, for example, is groundwater situation in Southern Europe. And my colleague from the Spanish Academy was a chairperson of this working group. So this was an analysis of the water situation in the southern part of Europe, realizing it is much better to pick areas in which there is a big problem and not, you know, to cover entire Europe, for example, as water is concerned. And I mentioned here climate change for infectious disease statements. The question is, of course, do we have impact? This is very difficult to measure. I think we have realized in the past that we are more and more getting questions from policymakers which we should answer either at a national level or at the EU and Commission level. But also we have tried to actually get into high-impact journals, because this would also be a wide distribution of our activities. And what I mean, you can see here, we were capable to get 6 statements of infectious diseases into a leading journal like Nature, Science Translational Medicine, Lancet, which is quite interesting and has quite an effect. Number one is it is read widely by the scientific community. And scientists, which we ask to participate in our working group, sometimes come with a question, is this really worthwhile to participate, because I am doing science, I have to have impact factors, and if I now spend my time in giving science advice to policymakers, is this good for my career? If they realize that we published in high impact journals, it shows that what we are doing is of interest to the scientific community as well, which has quite an impact. But interesting enough, we also received comments from the EU Commission, members of this big organization, and also from members from Parliament, that they realized, well, these statements, once they are also, at least the summary is really, I'm almost finished, published in interesting, in high impact journals, this is certainly worthwhile, and then this is a support for what we are doing. Okay, what are the work in progress? We are working right now on plant genetic resources for food and agriculture, sustainable biofuel, adaptation to extreme weather, direct to consumer genetic testing, carbon capture storage, science policy dialogue with NASAC, and GM crops with NASAC. Why do we do this? I think it is more and more important that what we actually discuss here can also have an impact on other networks. We would like to collaborate, and we will start science policy dialogue with the African academies, because they approached us, and as far as GM crops are concerned, you know, there's a white spot on there. This is Europe and this is Africa, where green technology and GM crops are actually not accepted by society. So we will try to give at least an analysis of the present situation by comparing the situation worldwide in comparison to Europe and Africa. And as you can see here in my last slide, we certainly will be always active in this area. We will pick topics which are of importance to society, importance to politics, either when we are asked to do this or when we see that this topic is coming up, and that we try to inform and give them a basis so that politicians can make a decision on a scientific basis. Thank you very much for your attention.